Welcome to Manage Tools.
This is Kate.
And this is Sarah.
Today's cast, top 10 hiring mistakes, number 9, comparing candidates, part 1 of 1.
The questions this cast answers are, what are the most common mistakes in hiring? Should I compare candidates to one another? And what's the right way to determine whom I hire?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
As the summer starts to wind down, don't forget about your fall training needs. September through December tends to be our busiest training delivery period due to companies trying to get their training completed before the year's end. So now is the time to start talking to Maggie about your needs and desired timing. If you wait too long, we may not be able to work within your preferences. Contact us at customerservice@manager-tools.com to start the conversation today. Kate, this is something we talk about so often, hiring, interviewing, the entire situation where we are determining to whom we're going to decide to become a new member of our team or our organization.
And we just did this.
Yeah, we did actually in Chicago, I think we presented this.
I mean, we just hired.
It's Oh my gosh, that too. You're totally right. Both of the same are true. Yes.
Yes, we just hired somebody. And so this is very recent for me. I had a conversation with somebody who was not super involved in our hiring process. I mean, they interviewed the candidate, but they said something comparing candidates and we had to have a conversation about, dude, it's not a race where we pick the fastest person. It's a race where we compare people to the qualifying time.
Yeah.
Not comparing people, rather comparing them to the standard.
Mm-hmm.
Not comparing people to each other, rather comparing them to the standard, because we are comparing them to things.
Exactly. That's exactly it. I think a lot of the reason we have so many assumptions about hiring is due to lack of training, essentially.
Mm.
Our training with the interview process, if you will, is being interviewed. And that's not training, folks. That is not education in how something works. And when we have got job candidates, or when we are job candidates, sorry, when we are job candidates, we assume we're being compared to other candidates.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, why wouldn't you? May the best candidate win. We make that assumption. And in most cases, frankly, this is true. Companies compare candidates to one another. It's not unusual, but it's also a classic, classic hiring mistake, because even if the company hires the best candidate, that candidate might still not be good enough to do the job.
Yeah.
That's the thing. The best of a bunch of bad candidates is not likely good enough to hire. It's a classic mistake. It's just, it happens all the time. You're choosing the best of the worst. And that's not good.
Yes. And we don't want you to be stuck in that position. So, 4 things. Don't compare candidates to each other. Compare candidates to the job. Communicate these approaches to your interviewers. There is an exception. Starting our conversation with, don't compare candidates to each other. The fallacy of comparing candidates to one another is really best illustrated by imagining a bell curve. The curve represents the distribution of candidate strength or effectiveness. The right side of the curve represents better candidates. The left represents weaker candidates. The middle hump of the normal distribution represents the mass of average candidates. So if you can imagine that, kind of low, close to the horizon on the left, then increasing upwards to make a little hill. In the middle there, we've got the mass of averages, and then sloping back down on the right, again, closer to that horizon to represent a lower number of really great candidates.
Yes, exactly. And folks, interviewers know this curve exists. The assumption of most interviewers and hiring managers is that the screening process has all but eliminated the center and left side of the curve, if you will. Leaving
danger,
exactly. Leaving only candidates that are based on screening. The candidates which is the ones that have made it to the interview process,
Right. They made it through that screening.
Yes, exactly. On the right of the bell curve and that distribution of really exceptional candidates on the far right.
Right. So you assume that that's all you're seeing.
Exactly. All you're seeing is the top of the candidate pool or the top of what will meet the needs of your organization. Moreover,
right. You are assuming when you're doing this, yes, that 80% of the bell curve has been eliminated.
Exactly.
You're not even in that area.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Are they qualified? Are they not qualified? The assumption is if they're here, they are.
Mm-hmm. But this creates...
We know what assumptions do.
Yeah. It creates another assumption. So we're just really doubling down here.
Yeah.
On the interviewer's side that is really mistaken. It helps us to assume, or it leads us to assume, causes us to assume that all candidates that you're seeing that are coming to you, that you're being presented with, no matter what place you are, maybe it's resumes at the beginning, maybe it's phone screens, whatever, you assume that all the candidates you're seeing can do the job.
Mm-hmm.
As an interviewer, you may be thinking to yourself, oh, if they got to me, they've jumped a bunch of hurdles, and those hurdles were, could you do the job? And if interviewers believe this, it's natural that they approach interviews as a comparison of candidates. Whew, but we have to remember that not only was the screening prior to them reaching you probably cursory, but it was often done by HR or recruiters who do not have true firsthand experience with the job you're hiring for. Y'all, they don't know what software you need people to know. They don't know what the ins and outs are. It's not their fault, because they cannot know all the jobs in the organization. There's so many jobs in your organization, the nuances of what those jobs entail, even just on your team. For example, you may have an entire team of systems engineers. Just because they all have the same job title or role or job description, heaven forbid, doesn't mean that they all day in, day out do the same things. And frankly, most job descriptions are meant as almost like sales pitches. They're not coverage of what is actually being done in the job. And therefore, you cannot think to yourself, because this person has reached me, they have the right qualifications. And again, not HR's fault, not the recruiter's fault. They just don't have a deep enough knowledge of all the roles in the organization. Think about it. They can't. They could not possibly. Mm-hmm. And so you end up looking at people who you believe have been screened. Let's say you assume 50% of the screening is accomplished. I would pull that way back. Believing that all candidates who come in for final interviews are capable of doing this job is a mistake. Assume that 10% of the screening has been done.
Exactly. Or be on the safe side. Assume that none of it's been done and your job here is also to screen whether or not they're capable of doing the job.
And frankly, you're the only person who can. You're the person who knows the job.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly it. When you're outsourcing, if you will, this evaluation or these initial evaluations to a group of people who don't do what you do, it's a whole danger zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the only danger that comes in with this candidate comparison situation we're setting up. When you're comparing candidates to one another, you naturally create biases, which create an uneven playing field.
Mm-hmm.
The candidate who gets an early rank of number one comes to be looked at more favorably. We start looking for positives because we don't want to be wrong in our earlier rankings. We also interview more casually, right? Take our foot off the gas. We're a little bit easier in our interviewing. What's more, the candidate we rank as, if you will, three, the third person has blemishes that suddenly start to appear because why? We're looking for them and we might not interview them the same. We might put them through a more rigorous process and identify these blemishes. Of course we will. The same blemishes would appear if you did that to, let's say, candidate number one. However, because we naturally, through bias, start to treat these people different, it creates an uneven comparison.
Mm-hmm. There really are two scenarios that really can illustrate this more clearly. Having only one candidate or having candidates spread out over a period of weeks. Okay, when there's only one candidate in final interviews, to whom are interviews going to compare them?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the data show that when only one candidate makes the final round of interviewers, offers are extended at far higher rates than when there are multiple candidates. This is an indicator of the interviewer's belief that all final round candidates are essentially capable of doing the job, that they've been fully vetted, that they are ready, and we're just ticking the box, which I have seen. And frankly, I think panel interviews, which we're not here to talk about, unfortunately, because I have so many things to say, panel interviews, I think, further this issue. But without someone else to compare a lone candidate to, the default interviewer conclusion is just to recommend hiring. Sure, this guy can come in. We'll get him. Be great. And most interviewers are biased towards hiring generally, which is a function of the fact that when you have a hole, it's very obvious and there's a lot of pressure, et cetera. It's also because of the need for more productivity and concern regarding workload. And honestly, though, it's not a good spot to be in. It's really bad. It causes confirmation bias to lead you to decisions that are not positive. So that's one of the scenarios. So there's just one candidate in the final interviewers, and that person often becomes the default yes. And that's not a good situation to be in.
They made it this far. They're the only one. Therefore, they're the one that makes it. Absolutely. And folks, the second scenario is when multiple candidates are interviewed over a period of weeks. Comparing candidates to each other in this situation is impossible. And it's made especially impossible when every interviewer is not required to adhere to a standard set of interview questions, which leads candidates getting a different interview than every other candidate by every one of the interviewers. And this lack of rigor, it just leads to unpredictable results, which ought to be the bane of every hiring process. I mean, if nothing else, you want your hiring process to be proven successful, and therefore repeated successes are the output of your hiring process. But when you've got unpredictable results, your hiring process is not successful. You shouldn't be like a 50-50. They could be good. They could be horrible. Who knows? It's not rolling a dice. It's making organizational decisions that are incredibly important for the long-term success of you, your team, your organization.
I get so nervous when I hear people say things like, well, we didn't really have time, or we're trying to get this done. The lack of fear associated with interviewing and its inevitable outcome, hiring, it keeps me up at night.
Yeah.
Honestly, it is a lack of understanding or a purposeful ignorance of the fact that asking you to spend 2 hours with this person right now is not a lot. And if you're not careful in these 2 hours, you're going to have to spend 8 hours a day with this person for the next 6 years. I mean, honestly, we should be building really high walls around the people we have around our organization. And you're contributing to hundreds of thousands of dollars in this decision-making process, and you don't have 2 hours for that. Honestly, if you hear me say nothing else this week, y'all hear me say this. Do not abdicate your responsibility to make strong decisions about hiring. And that includes not spending enough time on it.
Yeah.
Do not let me hear you say, I didn't have time for this, or I was really busy, or my phone was on. Y'all, these are $100,000 decisions, and you don't have 2 hours. You don't get paid that much, frankly. And I know it's my soapbox. I know I get on it.
Well, but we're manager tools, and we will be the first to tell you, if you want to make your management life easier, hire better.
Oh,
hiring
gosh,
better,
right?
Is the easiest way to ensure future you as a manager has an easy time managing.
It's almost like if you could hire people who could do the job,
right,
you would be managing less, more smoothly, more cleanly.
Exactly.
Because they could do the job, but people aren't doing what we really, really, really want you to do, which is compare candidates to the job.
Yes, exactly.
So let's go back to our bell curve. If we're only comparing candidates to one another, obviously the best candidate wins. Mm-hmm. And what is missing from the curve is an objective measure of whether or not the candidate can do the job, irrespective of their relative value compared to each other versus the other candidates, et cetera. To perfect the curve illustration, what we need is a vertical line intersecting the curve at some point, hopefully on the right good side of the curve.
Yes, hopefully.
Jeez. This line indicates the desired level of effectiveness in the role. Irrespective of whether a candidate is better than others, only those to the right of the vertical line are worthy of consideration for hiring. I've made this analogy before, obviously, and I just want to say it again. It's not a field day race and whoever wins gets a medal. It's the Olympics. There's a qualifying time. You cannot go to the Olympics unless you meet the qualifying time. So we can race as many people as we want. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who the first person in each heat is if none of those people are capable of the qualifying time. So on your bell curve, you put a line in the sand and you say, if you can't meet this, you can't come in because this place is the Olympics. It's not field day because I don't want to be tied in the three-legged race later to the guy who got hired because he was the fastest of the four heats where everybody was 6 minutes behind the qualifying time. I don't. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I don't. That guy is not good at his job. He doesn't know what he's doing. And frankly, I don't want to be tied to him. So I don't want to be at field day. I want to be at the Olympics. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. I want a qualifying time. I want a line in the sand. I don't care if we interview 25 people. We will hire none of them if they're not capable of this qualifying time.
That is exactly it. Now, so then I guess that begs the question, how do we do this? Like, how do we identify our qualifying time, right? So, folks, the way we do this is we compare every candidate to the role and not one another by creating a challenging but fair standardized interview based on the role, which focuses on role behaviors that are necessary for success. To be clear, by standardized interview here, we mean a single set of questions. That same set of questions is asked of all candidates, and that set of questions is focused on job behaviors. There is no place in the modern workplace for interviewers having their own style or going with their gut, right? Or just getting a feel for it. That is not professional. These approaches have been widely relegated to the dustbin of interviewing based on loads of data over the last 30 years. If nothing else, it's not repeatable. Even if you have a great gut, if no one else shares your gut, which by definition they do not, if no one else shares your gut, then it's not repeatable. It's not a practical behavior to engage in a professional environment. It's a single series of questions.
Right. Creating a standardized interview could only be done in advance of all final interviews and even the screening interviews. This is why at our Effective Hiring Manager Conference, we start not with screening, but rather interview creation. Mm-hmm. The best way we've found to create a standardized interview format is to use our interview creation tool, which is available to Manager Tools licensees. And then you can create interviews on your own. Well, you can create interviews on your own, not using the tool. It's harder. If you use the tool, you can create your own interviews with the tool. It takes 40 minutes roughly per interview set of questions per role, I would suggest. And we also teach you how to use the tool and how to create interview questions at the Hiring Manager Conference if you want to come and meet us and talk about it and ask questions. And I will say this also, if you ask your directs to use the questions and only the questions that you've created based on the job, eliminates the situation, which I have been in, where someone asks questions that have nothing to do with the job and that are in no way able to predict a person's success level in the job. Things like, if you were a color, what color would you be? Like is blue better than yellow? Oh my gosh,
the tree. If you were a tree, what would you be?
How many? I only know like four different types of trees.
A pine. A slash
pine. Is that better than an
oak? I don't know. It's just really, really long and tall. And I'm very, very tall.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I'm going with it. Is that a good answer? Probably not.
No, because being tall does not predict whether or not you can do this job.
Exactly.
In the same way that I prefer live oaks because I grew up with them.
Sure, yeah.
That doesn't have anything to do with this job or any job, frankly. And if you let people choose their own questions, the questions are bad. The questions are not repeatable. The questions are not standardized. The questions cannot, the answers to those questions cannot be compared to each other. And who cares about the trees? Also, I don't think that blue is better than yellow. Nobody cares. Not helpful.
Yeah, no, it's completely subjective. Again, Kate, you mentioned this earlier. We want these questions to be objective measures of whether or not they can do the job. And anything that's not an objective measure, there's no time for that. There's just no time for that. I mean, one of the reasons we hear often that people don't want to dedicate as much time as we think is necessary to bring in a good hire is they don't have time. Well, if you don't have time, folks, you don't have time to waste the time you've got by asking stupid questions.
Yes. So we make the questions. And then you have to tell the people who are interviewing that they have to follow the standard and that the standard includes these questions. So it requires that you communicate the approach to your interviewers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The way you as a hiring manager can both avoid your interviewers comparing candidates and having them compare candidates to the job is to explicitly explain your approach to all interviewers. And it takes nothing more than a 5-minute bit of guidance in your weekly staff meetings, followed up by individual reinforcement in your one-on-ones with all interviewers. Remember, when you're doing so, the vast majority of professionals have never received interviewing training. Again, most professionals consider their being interviewed as their interviewer training, which is laughable. Folks, that's not even equivalent to training. It's just an experience that we had that was probably terrible, let's face it.
It's like saying, because I've eaten a cheeseburger, I know how to make one at McDonald's.
Exactly.
You don't.
You don't.
You don't.
That's exactly it. Now, folks, remember, and we don't want you to shy away from the fact that this is your process. It isn't appropriate to leave to the individual choices of folks who, however well-intentioned, do not know what you know about the core principles of effective interviewing, such an important task. You must train them and hold them accountable for them following the process which you have outlined. It is your process. You own it. You're going to have to manage this individual. So you want to make sure your interviewers know how to evaluate.
Yes. So because we recommend that your directs be involved in interviewing people who are going to be part of your team.
Yes.
To your directs, to the people who are interviewing, who are part of the group of people, your interviewers.
Yeah, the peers of the future candidates or the future person.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And maybe some other people, maybe you're, I keep saying this thing where organizations demand that you have one or two other people, an outside person, et cetera. This is what you would say to them. And if you are a licensee, you can go to the show notes, you can download them, read them. You can use this script from there rather than trying to transcribe what I'm about to say. It's a bit long. Here we go. Okay. We're going to be doing some interviews in the next week or two. I have already sent you the interview questions that we are all going to use. Every one of us will be using the same interview questions. That's probably foreign to some of you. And that's how I run interview processes. There are a couple more things I want to highlight. First, remember that the purpose of every interview is to create a hiring recommendation. When you finish your interview, you make your decision whether you're going to recommend hiring or not hiring. An interview isn't a conversation that you later reflect on to determine how you feel about a candidate. Interviewing is about creating decisions, not thoughts or feelings. Be ready to present that decision backed up by candidate behaviors in the interview during our interview results capture meeting. As well, remember that effective interviewing is about trying to find a good reason to say no to a candidate. That does not mean that we will be overly tough or unkind to candidates. You can be kind while also looking for disqualifying weaknesses. But this is quite different from finding things to like. If you look for things to like, you'll no doubt find them. But you may well have missed disqualifiers. And if we hire that person, they will bring both their best and their worst to work with us. We must eliminate bad hires. The only thing worse than having this position open is filling it with the wrong person. Please do not compare the candidates to each other. Use the interview guide and compare them to the job. If we compare every candidate to each other, we might hire the best candidate who is still below the standard we have set out to hire for. Remember, compare them to the job. If they can do it and they're a fit for us, recommend hiring. Compare each to the job, not each other.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So folks, again, that's what you say to the other interviewers to prepare them for interviewing, essentially on your behalf, allowing them to be an educated basis of comparison against your interview of the candidate for the upcoming role. Again, comparing to a standard, using a standardized series of questions, etc. Well, you know we've always emphasized managing people as individuals. Now we're taking our own advice to heart by offering new pathways to professional excellence. We're launching three distinct licenses: the Career Tools License, the Manager Tools License, and the Executive Tools License. Each is specifically designed to provide resources and benefits tailored to your current career stage. Here's the best part. If you're considering becoming a licensee or due for a renewal, acting now could be incredibly advantageous. Purchase or renew your license before we launch, and you'll receive enhanced benefits at a lower price. How great is that? For existing licensees, keep an eye on your inbox for emails detailing how to seize this opportunity. We're genuinely excited about how this will empower your career growth. We're sharing this early because we don't want you to miss out. Your success drives us, and we're eager to give you every possible advantage. Thank you for being part of our community. We can't wait to embark on this new chapter of your career journey together. One other additional thing we want to mention, though, is there is an exception. There's one exception to comparing candidates to each other. When multiple candidates compared to the job and not other candidates show they can do the job.
Woohoo, that's actually a great place to be.
Exactly. Going back to that bell curve analogy that Kate's been using throughout the course of our cast today. Imagine you've got your bell curve. You've got your line, your standardized line drawn toward the right of the bell curve, and you've, for whatever reason, interviewed multiple candidates simultaneously or close to one another that you've discovered prior to making an offer to anyone, the two candidates have met or surpassed the standardized line. This is our standard. This is our minimum requirements for a hire. Now we have two people. Now we do have the ability to compare because two people have surpassed this standard.
There are also rare cases where more than one candidate is good enough for the role and you can get approval to hire both, which you can try if you think that's an option with your boss and the budget.
Oh, you know what I've thought of most recently, Kate, and I've been talking to some groups about is you ought to be in contact with the other people in your organization, peer or not, who hire for roles similar to yours. Now, to your point, you could ask your boss, can we get more funding here? Is there any way I could bring two people in? Example, I've got somebody retiring in 6 months. Could I bring this individual in and they would be that person's replacement? Example. However, if that's not an option, you ought to be able to go to your counterparts, your peers in the organization that are often hiring for positions similar to yours and say to that person, hey, I found a really good candidate. They're exceptional. They would have been a great add to my team. However, I don't have room for them right now. Are you looking? Because your organization has done all this work to evaluate an individual. I'm not suggesting that this individual, now that you've qualified them, ought to immediately be hired onto that person's team without any additional qualifiers. That person should still interview them, should still put them through their process. However, what I'm suggesting is, why not bring this person in on another team?
If it's possible.
Exactly.
Honestly, if you have been looking for reasons to say no and you can't find any,
right,
perhaps that really does indicate a positive candidate and other people should be aware of that. it's not always going to be true that you can hire two people. There might not be budget, there might not be positions, et cetera. So you end up maybe with two people, they're both qualified. If you really truly can only hire one, either because you don't have the budget or there's nobody else who could hire them or consider them, then you can compare them. When this does happen, if there's truly only one spot to fill, you don't have to immediately turn down the second rated candidate. We have a podcast about this called How to Handle Two Viable Job Candidates. Mm-hmm. Go listen to that content, learn about how to do it. If we had time to give you a whole nother podcast right now, we would do it.
We would do it.
Except that we already have given it to you. So that's where to go and find that. And it's a great spot to be in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a great spot to be in, having two people to surpass. Now, I will also say, though, if you find you run the process multiple times and every time multiple people are surpassing your standard, maybe get higher standards. That's all I'm suggesting. Because, folks, your standard oughtn't be the bare minimum. It ought to be equivalent to your top performer. Is a more reasonable comparison, which means that surpassing the standard, it just oughtn't be that easy. It should take more than that. And if multiple people every time are surpassing your standard, you might want a higher standard going forward.
Yeah, you might be setting the bar too low. And what we hope to help you do is create a high wall around the people that already work for you. If they're good, we should only be hiring people who are as good at or better than them. We want teams that continue to become better, and every hire either can add to the strength of the team or detract from it. Mm-hmm. And there could also be a neutral situation, I suppose. If we have a choice, and we do, because we are running this process, wouldn't we want every hire to increase the strength of our team? And wouldn't we want to engage in a process that does that? So that's our hope, is that we can encourage y'all to, with every single hire, increase the strength of the capabilities of the strength of your organization, not just your team, but the strength and capability of your team and your organization through hiring.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly it, folks. Interviewing well is a hallmark of an effective manager. It's hard work to do, but the benefits and risks make it worth doing. Comparing candidates to each other is a frequent mistake, which you can eliminate by educating your interviewers about what you expect of them and teaching them how to interview well. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks, Sarah. That's all for this week, folks. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Have a great week, y'all.
Bye, everyone.